government is not our master, it is our servant. Its only power, that which we the people allow it to have.
Liberty Watch is an independent program on KVOI dedicated to the notion that government remains servant, not master, and operating in the public interest for which the media in this country was designed by exploring controversy. This helps us to resolve our differences peaceably, refining controversy into clarity through investigation, research, interview of experts, and public feedback. Liberty Watch is based in objective reason and is biased towards individual liberty, and so is not the view of the station or anyone but the host, guests, and callers. Liberty Watch operates outside the realm of political correctness, taking no notice at all of race, creed, religion, ethnicity, political affiliation, or orientation, focusing on content of character in eternal vigilance to the free flow of information about government, technology, current events, and our steadfast Constitution. The program is paid, produced, hosted, and operated by Charles Heller, and any mistakes are solely his responsibility.
Our responsibility, how the topic keeps re-arising, and we have the joy, pleasure, and honor of having with us Philip Williams again, and his return, his triumphant return, to talk about Federalist Number 29. Philip is the head of a local business group that does workman's compensation insurance and compliance issues, and they're a nationwide company. I believe they're listed on the stock exchange, are they not?
We are.
Yeah.
Ticker is BBSI.
And BBSI, they are a wonderful company, and they help keep people out of Dutch with the federal government and state and local governments as well. And he's a genius at it. That's why he's in charge. And we're here to apply said genius to Federalist Number 29. Give us, if you would, Philip, give us an overview of Federalist 29. What is it trying to say?
Federalist 29 is probably about the thickest four pieces of paper I think I've ever written. How apropos, really, for the topics of today. But Federalist 29 is designed, or actually it was intended to discuss the idea of why the militia exists, who commands the militia, who appoints the officers for the militia, how the militia is to be trained. It refutes the idea that the militia could be used to easily combat a standing army, but talks about how the militia could be used in time of, what's the word they like to use these days?
Rebellion?
Rebellion and...
Insurrection.
Insurrection, yeah. So, very, very interesting, and it further backs the requirement for a robust and healthy Second Amendment.
Mm. Yeah, because the militia supplied their own weapons.
They did. And I know that we've mentioned once or twice in episodes before that in times of old, if it was your day to serve on, if you had jury duty, you were expected to bring your firearm to jury duty with you. And in the case where you didn't get selected for a jury, that was your day to train in the militia.
Mm-hmm.
That was how they used to handle that.
And that's what well-regulated meant, being trained and basically shot to point of aim. That was a well-regulated sight.
That was part of the definition. The second part of it was to make sure that you had a firearm.
Mm-hmm. And sufficient, I believe the phrase was ball and shot.
Yes.
So.
And so it's just amazing. As I'm reading this thing, and I was like, wow, California much?
Yeah. Well, you know, in California, you can still legally have a black powder cannon.
Gee, how useful those are.
Well, the point is you can have it. Can you imagine, though, driving down the 405 with a towed, like a 12-pounder on a cart? And all I don't think it would cause consternation, though. I think people would understand a brass cannon is not a threat to the people on the freeway being towed in or carried in the back of a pickup truck, but it just is funny. I've thought there was a listener here some time ago that worked in plexiglass, and back when I still had that little silver station wagon, the Pontiac Vibe, I was thinking just for an instant of forming a plexiglass dome and some dummy .50 caliber barrels and putting it on a and putting the thing on a, like a on a cake rotating type 12 volt electric motor, and have the 50 caliber mount going around slowly in a circle on the back end of the station wagon, and thinking how fun that would be to drive around with.
It would be, but you as you know as well as I do that there's a whole lot of people that would claim to have PTSD over just viewing it.
Maybe, but only if they flew in a B-17, because that's what it would be replicating. But, you know, the top turret on a B-17 or maybe a B-26 or B-25. But, you know, the thing is, it's interesting to think about that. In Tucson, people would call it a novelty. In Phoenix, they'd call it necessary equipment. And in California, they'd call it, you know, offensive, whatever, know, a trigger. It's a micro triggering, except it more be a macro triggering than a micro one.
I'm envisioning like a large jacked up four-wheel drive truck with a similarly mounted turret in the belly.
Oh my God, that would be! Oh my God, that would be fun! Oh yeah. Especially if it was like if it was set up on a on an IR sensor, so that it sensed heat, and anytime anybody walked around it, it would stay point fixed on them. That'd be
funny.
And
it was timed so that it wouldn't take out your own tires.
There you go. Yeah, I got interrupter gear like the propeller, like the guns on a Fokker, on an early model Fokker. Okay, we went way down a rabbit hole. In
squirrel.
Where the timing of Federalist 29 couldn't be more perfect or apropos to what's going on right now in California, as it talks about the use of the militia for defense against insurrection, and I'll quote it here for about three sentences without my glasses. Of proficiency in military. Wait a minute. Hold on a second. I know exactly. Pardon my being off mic for a second, but a scout is prepared.
Oh, well, while you're doing that, let me read this sentence.
Yeah, go ahead.
Little more can be reasonably aimed at with respect to the people at large than to have them properly armed and equipped, and in order to see that that this be not neglected, it will be necessary to assemble them once or twice in the course of a year.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Hello, Second Amendment.
Drill. And that is a well-regulated militia, one that is drilled to precision. Quote.
Well, as precise as I can get, 2 days a year.
Right. Quote. Of proficiency in military functions, which would be essential to their usefulness, this discernible uniformity can only be accomplished by confining the regulation of the militia to the direction of the national authority. Unquote. In other words, the president has the authority to call up the militia. What did he just do in California?
I know, and they act like he's violated the Constitution. And I'm thinking to myself, no, he's acting...
He's fulfilling it.
He's fulfilling it entirely with the original purpose as the founders saw it, which was... A lot of people forget, and I think 29 does an amazing job about talking about this, is that the purpose of the militia was actually to guard against the threat of the idea that what if your military got taken over by insurrectionists?
Right. Yeah,
then your only true option is a militia, and they're going to have nothing but an uphill battle. Even if they are assembled once or twice a year to make sure they know which direction is things are supposed to be pointed in.
Right. Well, if you look at the last administration, when the auto pen in chief said that, well, you know, you're going to have F-15s to go up against the military. Yeah. Do they stay in those F-15s or do they eventually get out of them?
Exactly. Where was it? I wrote it down because it was such an interesting quote. I was half thinking about, there's a couple of these I was thinking about maybe turning into T-shirts, but one, where in the name of common sense are our fears to end if we may not trust our sons, our brothers, our neighbors, our fellow citizens?
Yeah. I mean, take that, conspiracy theorists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, it's very, very...
It's crystal clear.
Yes, my wife and I were talking about this morning, and we decided that if you want to run for House of Representatives, U.S. Senate President, or Vice President, you need to pass a test on the Constitution and the Federalist Papers.
I would be in favor of that. I absolutely. By the way, I've been passing. I ordered 5,000 of these cards with the stated purpose of government in the U.S. on one side, mm-hmm. and Arizona on the other, with Article 2, Section 2 of Arizona's Constitution. And I've been passing them out now for 2.5 years. And I went to a breakfast with at the Maranatha Church here on Friday morning. And the moderator, Paul Parisi, was quoting the stated purpose of government during the session, this public forum they were having. And I'm noting it kind of percolate more into the conversation, at least in places where I go, I'm noticing it percolate in the conversation. And now when I ask potential hired help that are running for office, when I ask them that question, they used to go, I don't, they would just take wild guesses. And now I'm beginning to see a trend where people sort of understand what the stated purpose of government is.
Yeah, it's not necessarily to wipe your nose and provide for every need and want in your life. That's not the idea. But that's probably a different paper.
That's going to be a promo.
Yeah, right. Here's another one that I liked. The power of regulating the militia and commanding its services in time of insurrection and invasion are natural incidences to the duties of the superintending the common defense and watching over the internal peace of the Confederacy. Doesn't that sound like what Mr. Trump was trying to accomplish?
It's exactly
just, 10, 14 days ago?
It's exactly what he just did, and it's exactly also the contrapositive to that is that it's exactly what the elected establishment of California did not do.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I heard on the radio one of the commentators say, well, it was a very limited riot that was going on in California. It affected almost no one.
Not if you ask the emergency room physicians.
Well, not if you ask the law enforcement people in California who were overwhelmed in the occurrence, and not if you ask the ICE people who were attacked, and not if you ask the Los Angeles Police Department who lost a station to being burnt to the ground.
Right.
Well.
What are you going to do? Take over the media?
Well, I think I'll go build Star Wars. All right. No, I think I'll run a brand. Well,
maybe
I guess
run
I'll
promo.
Run commercials. Yeah, here we go. In the Wilkinson Wealth Management Studios at 520-790-2040. Call in and harangue us. And especially with lemon harangue.
Swap shop trains are coming, rolling down that free market track.
Sunday mornings, you can buy, sell, or trade anything lawful and moral on the swap shop. Let's listen.
Do you know what the record length is for the catch of the infamous Pima sand shark?
No, I do not.
I don't either. I just figured you might know.
That's a good trivia question. I think I'll look that up.
You're right. I know that the biggest one was in the Rialto, but anyway.
Swap shop, Sundays 10 to 11 a.m., right before Liberty Watch.
Hi, it's Mark Levin. Liberty Watch on KVOI is dedicated to the notion that government remains servant, not master. Sounds like Charles has been reading my books. Congratulations on 20 years on KVOI, Charles.
This Independence Day, join the listeners for a reading of the Declaration of Independence in front of the Udall Recreation Center at 7200 East Tankerberry Road, 8:30 in the morning, July 4th. Celebrate Independence Day at Udall Park, 8:30 in the morning, July 4th.
Tense's factions will be counteracted and controlled in their actions when this plan's enacted. And with a large republic with so many interests, it guarantees that no one can run in and commandeer it. Bishop checks ambition and 51 be saying that through separation, no one bridge be claiming. Checks and balances between the three will assure this. The president and courts and Congress got their limits. There's 83 more. John Jay and James Madison read 34. Hamilton has been penning.
And a little bit of Hamilton with the Federalist Papers wrap from the play Hamilton. And with us discussing Federalist number 29, we have the joy, pleasure, and honor of having with us Philip Williams, the Bella Buis of BBSI here in Tucson, and he is a self-educated expert, an autodidact on the subject, and diving right back into Federalist 29 to quote, to provide for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia, and for governing such part of them as may be employed in the service of the United States, reserving to the states respectively the appointment of officers and the authority of training the militia according to the discipline prescribed by Congress, unquote. Is that not a perfect example of federalism in that the federal government says you must have a militia and provide direction as to how to do it, but leaving the actual doing it to the states? Is that not perfect federalism?
Oh, it's spot on. It's spot on. And that's, I think that's part and parcel of being a conservative Republican is understanding how our Constitution unifies individual, state, and central government authority. And the idea here being in the sentence that you just read was they understood that a militia is already going to be coming from behind as far as skill and training, but that we always needed to have a core of people who understood what it meant to actually assemble and train an army. And that group of people, a lot of them were actually in sheriffs. I mean, you grew up watching Westerns. I know I've seen a bunch. Mm-hmm. And how many times have you seen the sheriff raising a posse?
That's the posse comitatus.
Yes, that's exactly what they're talking about here is, hey, the sheriff is raising a posse. That doesn't mean go down to the sheriff's office, get your badge, and he'll hand you a gun. It means get your gun out of the case and go down to the sheriff's office, and he'll hand you a badge.
Right, exactly, yeah. And by the way, in Arizona, there is a statute that commands the assistance in service of process. In Arizona, a police officer can command you to assist him.
Yes.
And it is illegal for you to refuse. It's just, I used to have that in the concealed weapons class when it was a 16-hour class. Now that it's 8 hours, there isn't room for it.
Right.
It is a part of Arizona law.
But this 29 just is so enlightening. You know, I think if you get into an argument with somebody who talks about how they should be allowed to regulate firearms and all sorts of stuff, and you ask them if they've read 29,
mm-hmm.
you almost, they have no ground to stand on if their answer is no.
Well,
because they must first understand what a militia is, what its purpose was, and how it was to be operated. And 29 is the roadmap for that.
You first have to have an understanding of reason.
Well, there's that, too. And it was kind of funny because, I'm always having to look up words when I read these darn things.
Uh-huh.
And raillery.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, Go ahead.
I had to look that one up, and
I did too.
Yeah, like I'm gonna add that to my mental dictionary. The use of the word raillery,
mm-hmm.
Which is essentially to say that something is laughable,
mm-hmm.
and they actually talk about the counterpoints that were made during the discussion of things like the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms, and in the Constitution, and they talked about how the counterpoints, against the Second Amendment idea or against the militia, were subject to raillery, as to say they were laughable,
mm-hmm. risible.
Yes.
And there's a word that a lot of people have to look up too. So, but or levity. That was an inside joke. Never mind. It was aimed at one person who was listening. But I'm sure I could find ways to misuse it in advertising.
Raillery?
Raillery.
I'm sure. But, it's very important to understand that the militia was to be the citizens at large.
Right. The citizens, as it says in the openness program, the citizens are the militia.
Yes, the citizens are the militia. In time of need, when called up, they will most likely report to the sheriff or an officer that was appointed by the state. That officer's job is to muster the citizenry once or twice a year to make sure that they have at least a basic proficiency in how to operate the firearm, which they are expected to own. Remember, the 29th says, when you show up, we're not just going to inspect your ability to handle a firearm. We're going to inspect the firearm that you bring with you.
Right.
And throughout all of this, it then says, 29 actually alludes to the idea that if insurrection takes over the military and the military decides that it's going to be in charge of the country, the president has the authority to reach down into the sheriffs at the county level, call up a militia, and essentially go to war with our freestanding military.
Yeah, if the military is in rebellion.
Yes.
Why did the founders seem to worry that, there needed to be a process for summoning the Posse Comitatus?
Because their fundamental concern was exactly that, that the military would take over the country.
You mean that Benedict Arnold would turn Fort Ticonderoga over to the enemy?
Nah, never going to happen. Never happened. No such thing. Yeah. In fact, it's actually the second quote that I wrote down from the paper. It says, if standing armies are dangerous to liberty and efficacious power over the militia, in the body of whose care the protection of the state is committed, ought as far as possible to take away the inducement and the pretext to such unfriendly institutions, which is to say, the one thing that might actually hold the military at bay if insurrectionists were to take charge of it would be the idea that, holy moly, I got to go house to house because all of the citizens are armed and have some familiarity with their weapon.
To quote a Japanese admiral, a rifle behind every blade of grass.
Yes.
How radical was it, though, was it not to have a standing army and rely on the citizens for defense? How radical an idea was that?
Well, it was really quite radical. But the point was proven, and this is something that a lot of folks miss. Had not we had farmers, fur tradesmen in possession of firearms, how would we have called up any kind of militia that would have had any chance at putting down the British Army in order to gain our independence? Yeah. And that's really where the whole concept is born, is that the citizenry were able to essentially show up with their own muskets and be assembled into some kind of a militia. And it took Washington years to get, it took him what, I think it was two summers to get his army to where he felt like it was well regimented.
Where do you think they got the idea for F Troop?
Yeah, right.
On that note, we are going to start rolling on the next break at the bottom of the hour, and for once be on time in the Wilkinson Wealth Management Studios. Folks, call in and ask, or argue, debate, 520-790-2040.
This Independence Day, join the listeners for a reading of the Declaration of Independence in front of the Udall Recreation Center at 7200 East Tankerverde Road, 8:30 in the morning, July 4th. Celebrate Independence Day at Udall Park, 8:30 in the morning, July 4th.
Thank you for listening to Liberty Watch.
Swap Shop trains are coming, rolling down that free market track.
Sunday mornings, you can buy, sell, or trade anything lawful and moral on the Swap Shop. Let's listen.
I was looking around for one of these tiny little vacuum cleaners that operates by itself. And what did I find? There are cameras in there, and the images are sent to places unknown.
Maybe there's a Chinese bathroom live cam site.
Don't clean the house in the nude.
Swap Shop, Sundays 10 to 11 a.m., right before Liberty Watch.
Hi, it's Dennis Prager. Liberty Watch is dedicated to the notion that government remain servant, not master. Goes very well with my concept of E Pluribus Unum, liberty, and in God we trust. Congratulations, Charles.
And I, Federalist, they complain under the name Cato and Brutus, and they fine and say we need a Bill of Rights. So there for New Yorkers to support the Constitution at their state convention also. They let us know why we should go ratify the Constitution. Ratify this Constitution, it's a better plan. It's a better plan. It's a better plan.
better than the Articles of Confederation. Confederation, Confederation.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think Hamilton sounded like that. I just don't.
Yeah, I don't think that was his pattern of speech after having read a few of his works.
He's a major writer of the Federalist Papers.
I can always tell the ones that he didn't write.
Why?
The writing style is different.
Ah. Hmm. You should have been a profiler for the FBI.
I missed on a few things. Linguistics would have been another good one for me.
Hmm. All right. I'd just like to find the cursor on the mouse. Ah, there it is.
It's over there.
Yeah. just west of where you're looking. What did they mean by how shall we prevent a conflict between charity and judgment, unquote?
There are two themes that are woven throughout the Federalist Papers. One is that we would often rely on the freedom on the soundness of a freely operating press. We'll save that for another show.
I better shut my mic off.
Yeah, because that's a whole other show. And then the second one is operating under the assumption that men in general tend to operate reasonably. And so there's a couple of themes there between the conflict between charity and judgment. Judgment doesn't necessarily mean that you're always going to do something that everybody likes, right?
No, it means you're going to do it in a considered way.
Exactly, exactly. And so you have to deal with that. Where I see us going with this, and there's a different concept addressed in 29. 29 does not just examine one side of the argument, right? It's not a all pro militia kind of paper. What it does do is they did fold in some of the counterpoints. A lot of the folks that were opposed to a militia were actually worried about the idea that the militia itself could become independently minded and it could itself inflict an insurrection.
Well, I mean, if you can have one revolution, you can have two.
Yeah, right? And it was I found it very interesting because they discussed the idea that, okay, so let's just assume that for a moment a bunch of we'll use the stereotype, a bunch of rednecks with shotguns and
AR-15s.
And AR-15s decide they're going to have themselves a little insurrection.
Yeah, they could call it, I don't know, Texas.
The reality is those 20 guys, while they might do some damage, at the end of the day are not going to be immediately capable of inflicting nearly as much damage as, say, SEAL Team 6.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The other thing was that the other counterpoint was, what if it was more than 20 people? What if it was, say, 2,000? Well, that becomes a regional issue.
Mm-hmm. Right?
If you want to assemble 2,000 people, especially in today's world where they can see everything you type into a keyboard, if you want to assemble 2,000 people across, say, the southern part of Arizona to conduct an insurrection, there's no way they could reasonably do that without being discovered.
Right.
And put down well before it happened.
Or let's say the president had a rectal cranial inversion and sent SEAL Team 6 against some portion of Texas. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
SEAL Team 6 would do a tremendous amount of damage.
Mm-hmm.
But if you put them up against the entire citizenry of even a small town in Texas, eventually they would run out of ammo and run out of people and be subsumed.
Yes, they would be ultimately overpowered, or they'd have to sneak out in the middle of the night.
By sheer weight of numbers.
Yes, and that's one of the things that 29 alludes to, is that at the end of the day, one of the concepts that they talked about was, what if the president decides he's going to lead an insurrection and he tries to mount that insurrection vis-a-vis the militia? And they laugh at that raillery, because they're relying on the good nature, good decision-making, the judgment of the citizenry to say, no, 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 you're not just going to call me up at the local sheriff's office and ship me 700 miles over to California to do something I don't want to do.
Right. They're just not going to do it.
Right. You know, it, like at the end of the day, the reasonable judgment of the citizenry would overcome this idea of a ill-conceived insurrection.
By the way, we had that happen. We had that happen in January of 2000, the January 6th insurrection. In the wake of the January 6th, riot, not insurrection, I misspoke, a number of states sent their National Guard to Washington, D.C. One did not. It was the Adjutant General of Arizona who says, I can't see an authorization in the Constitution for it, and did not.
Hmm. Well, beyond...
Mike, I'm sorry, what is his last name? Go ahead. Beyond...
I was going to say, beyond whether or not the state decided to participate, one of the things that the paper talks about, 29 talks about, is that the regular citizenry just simply wouldn't participate.
Right. What if they gave a war and nobody came?
Yeah.
The old 60s song.
Yeah, if you have a war and nobody shows up, right?
Right, yeah.
And that was that was a significant thing. So that it was really interesting. I mean, this paper, only 4 pages long, and cogently discusses both sides of the argument, pro and con, when it comes to the idea of building a militia, or at least maintaining one.
There's something that's not in the lexicon enough.
Militia?
No, cogent.
Cogent. Yeah.
It just isn't. We don't reason cogently. We sometimes reason with reason in quotes emotionally. We don't look at the facts of something. Sometimes we just, I mean, you know, we need a Secretary of State Spock sometimes, you know.
I think in recent years we've become a far more emotional society rather than a reasonable society. How I feel is more important than what is right.
Right. I flunked out of the Tucson Police Department's reserve program on that question. I was asked by the board, how do you feel about that? And I said, oh, I try not to have feelings. They really interrupt my life. I reserve my feelings only for my family. I do have thoughts about it, if that's what you mean. And they went on to the next question. I think that's right there where I flunked the board. her neck was a little red. It was a little, her veins were a little bulging in her neck.
A little tense.
Yeah,
huh?
there were some towels in that interview. It was kind of, when I reserved. No, it was better for them not to have me. It was they got someone far better than me for the purpose. Anyway, forming a militia would, quote, not only lessen the call for military establishments, but if circumstances should at any time oblige the government to form an army of any magnitude, that army can never be formidable to the liberties of the people, where there is a large body of citizens, little if any, inferior to them in discipline and the use of arms, who stand ready to defend their own rights and those of their fellow citizens. This appears to me the only substitute that can be devised for a standing army, the best possible security against it, if it should exist, unquote. They were very, very concerned about standing armies. Has today the modern police department become the standing army?
No, I don't think so. No, not at all.
Why or why not?
The standing military has a completely different purpose.
Mm-hmm.
The police department's job is low level disputes between the citizenry, low level problems, if you will. Among solo actors, really, right? The police department deals with, you know, most of the time is going to deal with single actors, maybe two or three people doing something incorrectly, or you could, I suppose, have a gang of people that are, you know, on a crime spree or something. But those are low-level issues. That's not the same as going in and taking a piece of territory or taking some ground.
Or martial law.
But, right.
But you saw the police be overcome in circumstances in Seattle and in Portland and in Los Angeles.
That's because you handcuff the police when you take away their ability to use tools and you also take away the consequences. There's hardly anyone in those crowds that are suffering any real consequences, right?
That's true.
So, but what's interesting here is they point out in 29 that if members of the military understand that a significant portion of the citizenry have some level of proficiency and potentially have even been in the small military that that a country supports, and gained their understanding and knowledge of military tactics and methods and how to train
and equipment
and how to be a good soldier, right? You're less likely to want to go door to door if I tell you that, hey, when you go into that neighborhood, mm-hmm. you know, there's seven or eight guys in that 50 house development that were active duty Army, and I think at least one of them is a retired Green Beret. Well, you know, that kind of changes your math a little bit, right?
It does.
Like you know you're going to have an issue when you go in there. So the whole purpose of being able to have a militia or call one up, it served many things. And in the sentence that you just read in the early part of what you were reading, it alludes to the idea that you can actually maintain a small standing army to deal with small skirmishes, but if you needed to actually pull people into the active military pretty quickly, you would have a resource to draw from.
Right.
And at the same time, a small military wouldn't have the capacity to take over a large country with a capable militia.
Right.
I mean, a capable militia doesn't mean they're going to, you know, be, you know, one guy's not going to take out 20 guys in the standing army, but if it's a 1-to-1 issue,
if it's a 1-to-3 issue, even.
Yeah.
Yeah, it changes the math. Right. I'm thinking in my head, I'm closing my eyes, and about 8 weeks ago, I went up to Mammoth with a bunch of guys that own a bunch of Class 3 stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And for the first time in my life, I shot a civilian-owned M79 grenade launcher. And I'm just thinking, one M79. Now, he didn't have any explosives because having explosives would be a tax stamp for every shell, whereas if you just have dye marker in the top of it, all you have to have is a tax stamp for the M79 and not for each piece of
right.
Of ammunition. But I'm thinking, man, you just take a bunch of black powder and instead of dye marker and put it in the top of that that capsule, and then put a primer in it with a detonator in the nose, and you've got yourself a good an effective grenade launcher to take out two or three people, you know, a person in front
yeah.
that you shot at and two or yeah. three or four next to them. And you get a few people with those, and that really changes the dynamics on the militia.
You know what I really like? Punkin' Chunkin'.
Punkin' Chunkin'?
Oh, you haven't gone to YouTube and gone down the Punkin' Chunkin' rabbit hole?
No.
Back east in the South, they love to make trebuchets.
Oh,
yeah. And they have contests with how far you can, you know, use your trebuchet to launch like a 12-pound pumpkin. It's a whole thing.
Man. Pumpkin chunk.
There you go, right there. I can't believe that. I mean, like, we have this phenomenal resource. There's a whole, like, subculture in this country that knows how to make medieval trebuchets and launch gourds over castle walls.
I've got the new command. Instead of load grape, it's going to be load pumpkin. Fire at will.
You want to talk about well-regulated militia. These guys are taking it to another level.
Pumpkin chunkin. I had not, was not familiar with the term of the practice.
Well, you have will
taught,
be now.
You have taught me something new. I expect to see this in the next iteration of Pirates of the Caribbean, where they're launching, they're dismasting each other with pumpkins.
You got to type that into YouTube.
I already did.
Yeah.
See it.
Join the listeners for a reading of the Declaration of Independence in front of the Udall Recreation Center at 7200 East Tankerberry Road, 8:30 in the morning, July 4th. Celebrate Independence Day at Udall Park, 8:30 in the morning, July 4th.
Swap Shop trains are coming, rolling down.
Sunday morning, 10 to 11 a.m. on KVOI, you can buy and sell and trade anything you want that's lawful and moral to own. Let's listen.
Rick, you're on the Swap Shop.
Hovercraft is like on Star Wars, but it's missing engine.
Yeah.
Easy, Chewy.
It's got its own trailer. My number is 272.
Swap Shop, Sundays 10 to 11 a.m., right before Liberty Watch.
We the people, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility. Provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare at hand, secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity.
And there we have set to song the stated purpose of government in the United States. Would that more of us would realize it. So, last segment with Philip Williams of BBSI locally and self-educated expert on the Federalist Papers. And we're discussing number 29. And you quoted something earlier about trusting our kids from, if we can't trust our kids to be the militia, you know, who can we trust? Are we being ridiculous? But the sentence before it bears investigation. Let me look at this over here. There is something so far-fetched and so extravagant in the idea of danger to liberty from the militia. First, that one is at a loss to treat it with gravity, whether to treat it with gravity or raillery, which you referenced earlier, whether to consider it as a mere trial of the skill, like the paradoxes of rhetoricians, as a disingenuous artifice to instill prejudice at any price, or as the serious offspring of political fanaticism. Were they watching CNN?
Isn't it amazing how that paragraph, like, I read that sentence,
right?
It's almost as if they got in a DeLorean, came to 2024, 2025, saw what was going on, and then went back to 1788 and wrote the Federalist Paper and wrote that sentence.
My kingdom for a flux transducer.
Yeah. I found myself, because I'd seen it referenced in another paper, and I'm not sure which one, and then again in this one about assembling once or twice a year the militia to make sure that they're properly
regulated
and prepared. And I'm aware that we used to do that you used to actually report and perform a day of drills. And I'm now finding that I think I want to go down the rabbit hole and see if I can figure out when we ceased that practice in our country.
I can tell you we did that in approximately 1902.
You think
with the formation of the Dick Act that formed the National Guard as it's currently constituted. People suffered from the delusion that the militia was not the people, but was the National Guard. It began to flow from that time.
You know, and I actually, there's a sentence in here where it alludes to the idea that the state can have a guard. But in the reading of that sentence, I remember reading it, but I didn't make any specific note about it, I remember thinking to myself, that sentence does not actually mean that a National Guard is a substitute for a militia.
Well, there's actually court decisions on it. There's the regulated versus the unregulated militia. The regulated militia is the National Guard. The unregulated militia is all capable citizens below the age of 45 who are capable of bearing arms. There's actually federal law on it. You got to look at the Militia Act. It's in Title 10 of U.S. Code, the Militia Act. And then you got to look at some of the subsequent court decisions around it. But there is both the regulated and the unregulated militia. He's writing notes.
Yeah.
I have a feeling we're going to end up in a Liberty Watch on that one.
I think we're going to be coming back for round two. Unfortunately, yeah. Not today. But
no.
I'm hung up on the definition of militia.
Well, we should do a whole Liberty Watch on the definition of militia, and including parts of 29. And I'm sure there's other parts of the Federalist Papers which reference the militia.
Because maybe we should spend a couple of episodes talking about this idea, because when I see the word militia, when I read the word militia, I of the people, that's the concept that I come to.
Mm-hmm.
Is a combatant component, or the ability of the people to defend themselves from whether it's a standing army, a National Guard, a foreign army, an insurrection, whatever. Militia to me says that is the ability of the people to defend themselves. So the idea of a regulated militia being the National Guard to me is rubbish.
Well, it's the organized militia as opposed to the unorganized militia. But the Militia Act of 1792 allowed the president to temporarily take control of state militias in times of crisis. This was later expanded in 1795, permanently allowing the president to call out the militia. Section 1, be it enacted by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of America and Congress assembled, that whenever the United States shall be invaded or be in imminent danger of invasion from any foreign nation or Indian tribe, it shall be lawful for the President of the United States to call forth such number of the militia of the state or states most convenient to the place of danger or scene of action as he may judge necessary to repel such invasion, and to issue his orders for that purpose to such officer or officers of the militia as he shall think proper. And in the case of an insurrection in any state against the government thereof, it shall be lawful for the President of the United States, on application of the legislature of each state or of executive when the legislature cannot be convened, to call forth such manner of the militia of any other state or states as may be applied for, or as he may judge sufficient to suppress such insurrection.
Yeah, that just simply codified everything that we just read in 29.
Right.
That's all it did was they realized, oh, hey, wait, 29's got some meat on the bones. We need to actually turn this into an act and get it ratified.
Right. But what's interesting is this is federal law, the Militia Act of 1795, and it's been amended many times. I think this is in Title 10 of U.S. Code. It doesn't show a reference. I'm scrolling through. Here's 1792, May 8th of 1792. I'm scrolling trying to see if there's a reference to federal law here of where it sits in federal law. It does not. I'm looking at MountVernon.org, which is a...
Probably have to expand and look for amendments to the act.
Probably so. But I'm not going to do that while I'm on the air, especially not 2 minutes and 20 from the end of segment. Final closing comments, Philip? Anything?
I want to go back to well-regulated militias and start doing that.
All right.
I think it would improve jury duty attendance.
Yeah, but the thing is, if you show up for state jury duty, you can check your firearm. But if you show up for federal jury duty, the federal building will not check your firearm unless you're in law enforcement.
Yeah,
even if you're a security guard, they won't check your firearm.
Yeah, if your name doesn't get called for a jury, you're heading out to the Pima County Fairgrounds to do drills that day.
Yeah, I like it. Well, there's a range out there for practice.
Yeah.
I would even be in favor of closing it to the rest of the population so that only militia could drill on the range on that day.
Yeah.
Although there's no reason why the civilians should fear the militia drilling in front of them.
They shouldn't, because the militia are the civilians.
That's true. That's true. But I can also see the point of having just a militia day because it's so important at the range. Because it is a public range, after all.
Oh. Well, we'll just have a couple of radicals here.
Well, the whole idea of this program is to engage in controversy so as to resolve conflict in keeping with our broadcast license to broadcast in the public interest. I think it's in the public interest to de-escalate conflict through peaceable resolution of it. Don't you?
And familiarity takes away scariness.
I agree.
You know,
I absolutely agree. We are going to go ahead and break for the top of the hour now. It's a perfect time not
it
to start
good.
Another topic.
Been fun.
Yeah, and let's do this again, and let's schedule our next one, but not now, because I got to do the station identification play and get in touch with the next guest.
Enjoy.
Who you might want to stick around for. He's a colonel in emergency. He works in emergency services. AM 1030, KVOI, Cortero, Tucson, The Voice. Stay tuned. for Colonel Josh McConkie and about exactly this type of an event that we've been just discussing in terms of sending in the militia on AM 1030 KVOI.